This is the Sunshine Economy, aging gracefully, the retirement industry in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Today, 8,000 Americans will reach retirement age. Tomorrow, another 8,000 will. And the next day. And the day after that. And the day after that. And all the tomorrows for another 15 years. If history is any guide, millions of those retirees will settle into their golden years here in the Sunshine State.
I came from North Carolina here.
I'm down here 16 years. Actually, 19 years, actually. From Jersey.
Chicago.
13 years from Michigan.
I grew up in Boston. Never liked the winters and the cold.
I lived in New York with a scarf around my neck, across my mouth in the wintertime.
I retired from New Jersey.
And I retired to Palm Beach, Florida. In 1996.
They come from all over, up and down the East Coast and the Upper Midwest. And while there may be plenty of reasons to move in retirement to Florida, it's no secret what fuels the retirement industry in South Florida.
The weather.
Being from Chicago, we were looking for warmth.
The reason I chose South Florida is my parents retired here.
Well, for the nice weather.
The weather, and I have a son living here.
The weather really brought me here. I couldn't take the cold weather in New York.
It's easier living.
The weather is everything.
What was it, 93 made me come down here for good. That was the winter that was.
But I wanted to live in a warm weather place where I could play tennis outdoors all year round.
You can't play golf. To me, I live for golf, and I play golf 3 days a week. Up north, you're not playing golf 6 months a year.
Need a position for a seven ball.
Just a few of the retired voices we heard from while visiting retirement communities in South Florida, including the billiard room where the guys were playing nine ball, and the community room with the ladies playing mahjong. It was there we spoke with Chuck Fallon, CEO of First Service Residential. That's a property management company. First Service manages some 35,000 single-family homes and apartments geared toward residents 55 years old and older. We met Fallon at the Ponte Vecchio community of 650 single-family homes in Boynton Beach.
There is more and more appetite for defining a culture or defining a persona, and that's becoming more of a prevalent activity. There's a lot of other movement going on in this sector that is trending. But we see it really just getting started.
In terms of identifying that culture of a community, we've just walked in here at Ponte Vecchio to essentially a library, an oak-lined entertainment and library that I imagine is open to the community.
Correct. And it's this type of amenity that every single one of these communities, when First Service Residential sits down with them to determine what is the culture that you want to bring, what is the personality that your community wants to have, and decisions like this to develop a library fits with the lifestyle of the residents in the community. Mm-hmm. And there are also important considerations when First Service sits down with these boards to determine what do you want to look like in 5 years. So there's even activity like this, a room like this, or amenities like this that are planned years in advance.
It's an interesting decor in here because you've got movie posters, for instance, of some golden oldies from the golden age of Hollywood, Casablanca, An Affair to Remember, Wizard of Oz, right next to publicly available internet service computers.
It is a growing phenomenon, and it's no surprise, right? And all of the 55 and better communities these days have children and grandchildren who communicate in that way, and that is the nature of many of these communities.
Let's go take a look and see what else is down the hallway here. So, Chuck, we've walked into a room. Hi, ladies. What are you playing today?
Mahjong.
Who's winning? Probably a couple dozen tables here of quartets set up, and you can hear the tiles
yes,
moving
indeed.
Around. Is a 55 plus property more difficult to manage because the residents are more actively engaged, perhaps because they have the time to get engaged in their communities?
That's a great question. I wouldn't suggest that that 55 and better communities are more difficult to manage. I would suggest that they present a unique opportunity. In some cases, a challenge, mainly because, again, these communities are trying to set both a value proposition and a culture that may be unique to them, and that can be difficult to ascertain where it needs to go.
As we're seeing the ladies here play their afternoon card games, if this is a first service property in New Jersey, if it's a first service property out west, mm-hmm. what kinds of different amenities are unique to right. South Florida, and what kinds are universal?
I've had the pleasure of seeing Ladera Ranch in California, 7,000 homes, Brambleton in Northern Virginia, 8,000 going to 12,000 homes, Sun City in Henderson, Nevada, 5,600 homes. A lot of the amenities are very similar. The clubhouse, the sporting activities. Every one of these communities, though, has a different feel when you come on property.
Demographics are favorable for these kinds of facilities. The geography is favorable, of course, in South Florida. The opportunities for a company like yours, but also some of the competitors that you see moving into the space.
Mm-hmm. It is certainly a target-rich environment over time. And if you just look at the demographics, right, people are living longer. And not only are they living longer, the financial resources that they need aren't necessarily there at 55 where they used to be. So they're actually working longer, too. So some of the trends that we're seeing is these communities, especially on the new side, are being built with the surrounding area in mind, number one. So looking at tapping into resources outside of the community, so almost more urban-like or pulling the urban in. And so that, both from a location standpoint and an amenity standpoint, changes the dynamic a little bit, as well as these communities are, we're seeing business being brought into, since they're still working, even business centers and having work and home in the same community is starting to evolve.
Some of the demographers and critics will point out these communities are far removed from urban areas. They've been traditionally built in pretty suburban areas. We're in a suburban area here in Boynton Beach, and it can isolate those retirees from their communities, either perhaps by design or not by design.
I think for the more established communities, it's probably more of a challenge, and things where First Service Residential needs to work with the boards to figure out how to bring those in-house. But on the development side, though, you see a lot more focus on trying to get these communities closer to retail, closer to urban or semi-urban environments.
Chuck Fallon, CEO of property management firm First Service. Now, an example of one of those retirement communities in an urban environment opened less than a year ago in downtown Coral Gables. The Palace Coral Gables is run by the Kendall-based The Palace Group. Jacob Chaham and his wife came to South Florida with $35,000 back in 1980. Today, they run a dozen senior living communities in South Florida and Israel. Annual revenue? More than $100 million, according to Chaham. And he sees further growth ahead.
The future demand is definitely pretty high.
You have facilities in Weston and Broward County, in Miami-Dade County, here in Coral Gables, building one in Homestead. Is there a difference of community acceptance and community welcoming of these kinds of facilities and the economic ripple effect that the jobs, not only from construction but also maintenance and servicing, can have in a local workforce?
I can tell you that the first 15 years of our career, starting in 81, it was a really tough time to convince neighborhoods and communities to let us build a community like this. Today it's much easier. Today, everybody starts to see really the economic effects of these communities. If it's manpower, if it's jobs that we are creating, and even solutions to the elderly parents that they have.
What has changed? Certainly the demographics have gotten older. We're all aging at the same speed. Have the economics changed in this industry? Has the business model changed?
Not necessarily. Although this industry got the less effect of the disasters that we went through 2008, 2009, for the simple reason it's a need-driven business. But what really changed, I believe, is the quality of the facilities that started to be built. And if we are going back 40, 30 years ago, the communities or the places that really will accommodate the elderly were really terrible. And as this improved and the quality of the communities improved, the quality of the services improved, I believe that really the people started to accept it much easier.
Are you seeing the pipeline of skills necessary to continue the kind of growth and meet the demand that you're anticipating for your facilities?
Totally. We are employing today about 1,000 employees in South Florida. And because we are really servicing from the 55 and over, independent living, assisted living, nursing home, and rehab centers, we need a lot of professional people. And unfortunately, and I must tell this, we don't have enough. Mm-hmm. Then what we do actually, we are taking a young generation and we support them to go through the school and to prepare them. And as a matter of fact, as of today, most of our managers are students that started with us at age 18. Today they are 30 and they're running some of our communities.
You pay the tuition, for instance, or tuition support?
That's correct.
And what types of skill sets are you seeing a deficit of?
The couple things that really always you're going to have a deficit. One is actually professional nurses, and I'm talking registered nurses and LPNs, and to prepare, the schools do not prepare enough nurses. And it's something that goes back already 20 or 25 years since we started with this, and until today the same issue.
This community here in the Gables is an interesting example of a facility built in what could arguably be called an urban area. Are you seeing that place as the growth, and what kind of impact does that have on service costs and real estate costs as you're competing with commercial interests and younger generations who want to live closer in?
You see, until about, I would say, 16, 17 years ago, I thought the same thought that most of the developers that developed this kind of communities to go out of the center, to get out of the middle of the city, and to go after a lower cost of real estate, and the people will come. In the last 15 years, after running a lot of focus groups and running after demographic, we find out that you have a pretty big group of people that grew up, were living all their life in the middle of the city, and really they want to be in the middle of everything.
The Palace Group's Jacob Shaham speaking with us from his newest senior living facility, the Palace Coral Gables. That kind of urban senior living may not come cheap, though. Rent at the Coral Gables location begins at about $4,600 per month. That includes two meals a day, utilities, housekeeping, and activities. Still to come on our program, caring for those late in retirement.
There's an opportunity for geriatric care managers to get in on every level.
This is the Sunshine Economy, aging gracefully, the retirement industry in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thousands of retirees here make their homes in assisted living facilities known as ALFs. An investigation by the Miami Herald and WLRN 3 years ago found at least 70 ALF residents had died from abuse and neglect between 2002 and 2010. WLRN Miami Herald reporter Gina Jordan tells us lawmakers continue trying to toughen the rules for ALF operators.
Bad assisted living facilities would get a public black eye under proposed legislation. Reviews and complaints about facilities would be posted online, and within a year, ALFs would fall under a rating system created by the Agency for Healthcare Administration. Hollywood Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel says the bill will help protect ALF residents and Florida's economy.
The real driver of jobs in the state of Florida is an increase in population, and the population that we foresee coming to Florida are the baby boomers. And the message we need to send to baby boomers is that when you get older, if you need help where you live, that we have the best assisted living facilities in Florida.
Sobel says the bad ALFs are ruining the reputation of the good ones. So if the bill passes, the state will provide a website with information on more than 3,000 facilities in Florida, including their violations. Repeat violators would face bigger fines. But there's one big sticking point. Larry Sherberg with the Florida Assisted Living Association told a House committee he doesn't think people should be able to anonymously post comments about ALFs.
You're having people anonymously being allowed to comment on things they do not even know if it's valid or invalid, legal or illegal. And even the Miami Herald doesn't allow you to put in a letter to the editor anonymously.
State employees would monitor the comments and remove them if necessary. More than 86,000 beds are housed at ALFs around the state. The legislation unanimously passed the Florida Senate and is ready for a vote by the full House. I'm Gina Jordan in Tallahassee.
Safety, quality, cost, and convenience are all driving forces in healthcare, regardless of age, but certainly for those older retirees who may no longer have family in the area. That aging population is helping drive interest in geriatric care managers.
Stephanie Swerdlow, Elder Options Incorporated. So the business that we're in is providing service to older adults in the South Florida area. We do anything and everything that we need to do to make sure that that person is as safe as possibly can be, that the quality of their life is maximized to the, you know, to the greatest standard that we can do that. And we advise the family when we feel that things are changing, that if staying at home is no longer possible for one reason or another, making recommendations about alternate living arrangements. Adult children are making decisions to relocate their parents based on the fact that it's easier for them to take care of them nearer them. And so they're making different kinds of decisions. And that can apply to using geriatric care managers, assisted living, moving in, or moving to different kind of environment. I think finances are driving that a lot. They are typical sandwich generation. There's an opportunity for geriatric care managers to get in on every level. The problem is that there are a lot of folks who the title care manager is not trademarked. You know, anybody can be a care manager. And in fact, some of the assisted living facilities, they call the caregivers care managers. So people can call themselves a care manager. That doesn't mean that they have the education, that they have the skills. There's also other professions that are springing up, patient advocates, those kinds of things, where we don't know what the educational background of those folks are.
Kim Aloya, geriatric care manager. We're going to visit Molly. She is 93 years old, and she's been a client of Elder Options since March of 2005, and I have worked with her for the past 2.5 years. When I first started working with Molly, she was living in her own apartment with no aid or caregiver. She was doing well, but as she was getting older, she was getting around less and going out less and not eating as well as she should have. Between her daughter and I, who lives out of town in Washington, D.C. area, I thought Molly could definitely do more than sitting in her apartment all day staring at her caregiver, who was wonderful, but Molly is not the easiest to encourage to do things. So we started looking at assisted livings. So basically, because she's in an assisted living, I don't necessarily have to go make sure she's eating and stuff like that. Although the ladies at her table always tell me what she ate for her meals and how much she ate. They won't look out for her because she is on the older side. And then I ask them what she needs, because when you're in an assisted living, they don't get you your toiletries and stuff. So I do that for her. I have access to some money that I use every month to go buy her shampoo and whatever she needs, whether it's like I have socks I'm bringing to her that she needed. Because when you have family members out of town, you can't get those things. I go to Publix a lot and stock up her fridge in her apartment with whatever she likes. She loves orange juice, so I buy her orange juice and chocolate, just little things she could have in her apartment. So I usually come with something for her. But I go in, spend time with her, make sure she's being well looked after, make sure her apartment is, you know, being kept up. And that's pretty much it.
What did you bring for Molly today? What's in here?
Socks.
Brought her some
socks.
She's
very swollen. Oh, there she is. Molly. Yeah. Hi. Do you remember I told you we were going to come and see you?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Tom.
This is Tom.
Yes, dear.
Hi, it's a pleasure to meet you.
My pleasure.
How are you today?
Fine.
Good.
Okay, I brought you new socks to try, okay? Let's see if they're any better. Oh, I think these are so much better.
Yeah,
is that better? Perfect. Yeah, I brought you two pairs. I'm gonna buy you a few more.
Oh my.
But they're gonna have to write your name on them. I don't want them to get lost.
My name is Molly. I'm 93.
Right, good.
Well, we discussed what it is that we need, if we need anything particularly to be picked up, because I don't do any shopping. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything really wrong or hurts or isn't feeling good, I'll let her know. We were living in New York. I found that living up north during the winter months was pretty harsh. If it was a heavy winter, sometimes it isn't so bad, so you don't complain. But most of the time, we complain. I enjoy any kind of visitation from others. It brings the outside world back to me. All I can say is that getting old is not the best thing in the world. But if it's to be, then it's to be.
Time marches in one direction at one speed for all of us, Molly. Following along the geriatric care management visit with 93-year-old Molly in Hollywood, she retired with her late husband to South Florida decades ago, but her care is part of the evolution of the retirement industry today. Still to come on our program, positive aging. This is the Sunshine Economy, aging gracefully, the retirement industry in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Rona Bartlestone is past president of the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers, a founding member of that organization, and owner of Our Aging, an elder care consulting firm. Richard Eisenberg is assistant managing editor at nextavenue.org, a public media website focused on what it calls adult Part two. Both of us joining us on the Sunshine Economy. Rona, I think there's little argument that the quality of life for today's and tomorrow's retirees is as high as it's ever been. But is that quality of life sustainable as we see 8,000 baby boomers reaching 65 years old each and every day for the next 15 years?
Well, that's a really challenging question because there are so many layers to aging well, from finances to socialization, access to services, healthcare, et cetera. I think that we are in the midst of a sea change. I'm the eternal optimist, so I think that things are always have the opportunity to improve. Mm-hmm. I also think that changes in the healthcare delivery systems, while they're pretty chaotic right now, will eventually provide for better services and resources for an aging population.
And Rich, some of those changing services relate directly to real estate as communities provide more and more of the healthcare services on site as opposed to the traditional healthcare facility, rehab facility, or hospital.
That's absolutely true. What people are saying is if they can't live in their own home, they want to live in a place where they know they'll be able to get good medical care easily, and then they like the other amenities they can get too.
And this goes into this trend that both of you have used in your work called positive aging. Rona, is that to contend that prior retirees had negative aging? What is positive aging?
Well, I think it's really the development of an attitude that, as Molly said, aging isn't necessarily easy. It ain't for sissies, as the actress said. But I think with increased longevity, with better health into later years, with greater opportunities developing around the needs of society, that there are lots more opportunities for aging in a more meaningful way, having the opportunity to give back to the community, to have a sense of purpose mm-hmm. into your much later years than younger earlier generations of aging people had.
Rich, let me ask you, Florida, we know, has the largest share of its population at 65 years old and older compared to any state. A significant part of that population is 85 years old and older. How is private industry responding to this this search for continued meaning in one's golden years?
Well, I think it's sort of a struggle for private industry. I think they're trying to figure it out right now, particularly employers. You know, in the past, they would have expected their employees to retire at around 65 and then get on with their lives, and they could then move people up the ladder. And what they're finding is there are a lot of people in their 60s who don't want to leave and maybe can't afford to or just enjoy work. And so they're sort of struggling, these employers are, with, you know, how do we accommodate these employees and yet still make room for the younger ones too. And I think that's going to be an interesting challenge that we're going to see going forward.
Yeah, that's significant implications for the future makeup of the workforce as folks are aging, but not necessarily aging out of the American workforce. Right, Rich?
That's right. And we're also seeing a huge increase in the number of what are sometimes called senior entrepreneurs, people starting businesses after age 50, often in their 50s and 60s. The Kauffman Foundation that keeps track of these says that that is the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs these days. And I think that's partly because some of these people can't find work or at their age or feel that they can't. And sometimes it's because they've had a passion to start a business all their lives, and now they're finally going to do it. You know, people talk about the bonus years of our longevity, the age 50 to 70, now that we're going to be living longer lives, and how are we going to make the most of them?
Rich Eisenberg, Assistant Managing Editor at NextAvenue.org, joining us via Skype. Rona Bartlestone, founding member of the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers. What about the service providers that are providing health care and experience opportunities for the retirees? How are they responding to this, again, continued interest and demand on the part of retirees for positive aging?
Well, I think that's a tremendous challenge because traditionally people who go into the service business of aging have been taught about the medical model of aging and disability as opposed to the positive opportunities and the ability to use their wisdom from years acquired in whatever they did, both professionally and personally.
Yeah.
And so we have to really change the way we educate our people who are coming up in those service
How
industries.
So? What needs to change?
Well, they need to not see older people as, you know, Miami used to be called God's waiting room.
That's right.
So if we're all just sitting around waiting to die, then they don't have to know very much about, except, you know, how to feed us and diaper us. And that's not what older, later years are going to look like in the future. For some, it will, because there will always be those who have chronic healthcare issues that need to be attended to. But even people with healthcare issues, one of my role models was a woman who had MS, lived in her bed, and yet she published a newsletter for other homebound people to help them figure out how to reach out, how to have socialization, how to have stimulation, how to stay involved in the world. So there are increasing opportunities, and particularly with the new technology, with people, as one of the earlier speakers said, moving from a suburban environment to a more urban environment where there are greater opportunities close by. So there are a lot of things that will be changing both structurally and in terms of the workforce that we have the opportunity to optimize.
Rona Bartlestone, past president of the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers, and Rich Eisenberg, assistant managing editor at nextavenue.org, joining us here on the Sunshine Economy. Still to come, the geography of modern retirement.
One of the big boons to Florida is that the map of the Midwest is dotted with aging industrial cities. When the young people move out, the older people lose their network, and then they are prime candidates to relocate. They don't have to stay close to their children who've already moved on.
This is the Sunshine Economy, aging gracefully, the retirement industry in South Florida. Let's face it, your grandfather's retirement, if he had one, wasn't your father's. Your mom's retirement will be different than yours. A comfortable chair on the lanai is not the portrait of today's retirement consumer. Ted Fishman is a journalist and author of Shock of Gray.
The boomers that will be retiring and have already been retired, they're a savvy group. Their tastes are different than the generation that precedes them. They will be consuming in large numbers, but they'll be consuming in ways that their predecessors did not. I think by and large they'll be consuming experiences. So for communities that are attracting retirees, they'll be experience-rich communities.
What is it that communities are doing to get ahead of that curve to attract retirees, not only to visit, but to live and become part of the communities and become, let's face it, taxpayers?
What the communities are doing mostly is still capital investment. They're building, and they're building houses. It's what the residents do once they get there. You know, the biggest class of entrepreneurs in the country right now is the 50-plus group, and the 60-plus is pretty significant, too. And these are people who have either moved geographically and need to start a business or have lost the position they once had.
Yeah.
And despite what we think about business startups happening among young people, they are overwhelmingly happening among this older group.
Some of that's driven by economics, though, because of what's happened in the Great Recession and the relative jobless recovery we've seen for well-experienced and previously well-paid older employees.
Yeah, it's driven by two things. It's exactly what you said for the people who've kind of lost their mainstream income, but it's also part of the service economy. As we move to a more knowledge-based workforce, we have people who are able to port their skills to new places. If you're a professional, you could bring your skills to a new place, put out a shingle, have a self-financing business, and you're off and running. And that'll keep the communities where people are retiring more like communities where people are semi-retiring.
I was just going to say, it's interesting. We began the conversation talking about retirees. Presumably, that's defined as those that are no longer working and older and are now begin the significant consumption phase of their life and are no longer, quote unquote, productive, as an economist would define it. But that isn't the classic case of retirement in the 21st century, is it?
I don't think it will be, and you can see this in some Florida communities already, and it's not always paid work. You know, in Shock of Gray, I talk a lot about Sarasota, Florida, which has the highest per capita incidence of not-for-profit corporations. Because you have a very capable, knowledge-based person who is in the knowledge economy retiring down there, and when they retire, they still want to stay active. They want something to talk about at the dinner table. They want to feel like they're productive and contributing, so they start a not-for-profit to volunteer, to network with other people who are doing good works in the community. And the incidence of volunteerism in that community is exceedingly high.
You know, when we talk about retirement communities, you make a great point, which is those retirement communities, while certainly are economic opportunities for experiences and consumption, underpinning those have to be productive workforces, have to be not only the infrastructure that's necessary to support them, but also health care and cultural institutions and all those other things that those retirement communities are going to be are going to rest upon.
This is something we're wrestling with as a nation right now, and you can see it in the minimum wage debate. You know, a lot of the people who are struggling at a low minimum wage or below the minimum wage that's being proposed are in the service sector and the low-skilled health sector. And Florida certainly has legions of workers who struggle along on their service economy income. You know, one of the ironies of life is that the people who we charge to do the most important things in our life, take care of our kids and take care of our parents, are always the lowest paid ones.
The growth of low-wage jobs in the service sector, certainly here in South Florida, has been booming. We have more service sector jobs now today in South Florida than we did prior to the Great Recession. It's the area that's come back the fastest, but the wages aren't necessarily there.
You know, I think a few things are going to happen. One thing is that Florida's been at the retirement game long enough that those low-wage workers will also be retiring in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And Florida serves those people with a vast array of retirement communities by price. You know, there's some very low-end ones in manufactured home communities, for example. They tend to be pretty good and social. You know, you can't correlate quality of life with the expense of the retirement community. So I think people will be creative in finding solutions to that. But the other thing I think, Tom, looking forward is as there's pressure to push wages up in this sector, you're going to have to find a way to make the places more efficient and more productive. This healthcare work tends to be one-on-one work. There's very little multiple per worker. But the industry is getting very, very serious about figuring out enabling technologies, sensoring technologies, all kinds of things you know, ought to make it easier to pay each worker a little more.
Maybe
we'll have fewer workers per capita in that sector.
Perhaps the headcount will be less for that sector. Perhaps those that are working will get paid more. And the productivity and the wage opportunities that feed the technology to make that kind of balance sheet transition can be significant. The question is, can that be done in the same communities, in the same regions?
If the communities are smart, Sarasota, just going back to that community one more time, has started this thing called Institute of the Ages, I'm not sure the exact name, in which it is focusing on making Sarasota the Silicon Valley of aging, you know, as a center, as make Sarasota a laboratory for technologies for the whole world. So they can use what the residents they attract to live there as a laboratory to develop industries, and that can... You can attract the best workers to those kinds of industries.
What about some of the political realities as more baby boomers retire, as retirees live longer, as they cluster in warm climates like South Florida? How does that change politics?
I think that's one of the more sobering fronts. You know, we are learning more and more about the value of education earlier in life, and there's a price tag to that. The Obama administration right now has a $75 billion proposal for early childhood education, universal early childhood education in the United States. The social return on that is the classic social return on education plus. There's a Nobel Prize winning economist, Jim Heckman, who puts a 7x multiplier on this investment. Yet politically, it's very, very hard to get those big ticket items for younger populations today because the pressure and the nervousness is so much around late life safety nets, healthcare, and things that relate to an aging society.
Ted Fishman is the author of Shock of Gray. Ted, you've done a lot of work in Japan. For developed countries, Japan has an older median age than the United States. The United States is roughly middle-aged. Japan is of retirement age. What are the lessons that the United States retirement economy can learn from Japan?
Well, I think the way older Japanese people spend their retirement years is very instructive for Americans. You know, Japanese older people tend to be far healthier than their peers in the United States. They tend to be more physically active. They tend to be more socially engaged. One of the amazing things to me is that when Japanese people retire, they start going to innumerable reunions. You know, you're talking to people who are so delighted they've just come back from the reunion of their grade school or their junior high school, and they're reconnecting with all of these people. And sociability is so highly correlated with health. This is one of the things that Florida shares with Japan, is that the senior residential communities are so very, very social, and they offer their residents a very good health benefit. The rest of America doesn't necessarily have that. Japan and Florida seem to value it highly.
Ted Fishman's book is Shock of Gray. Still to come on our program, retired, but not tired.
Retirees today are more likely to start businesses, more likely to volunteer than they were in the past. Having a community that encourages those kinds of activities and has lots of opportunities for that, that certainly is an area that can keep South Florida attractive.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. When the housing market went bust, Florida's population stopped growing. There were plenty of reasons why, but in 2009, for the first time, Florida lost its preferred destination status for retirees from New York, lost it to North Carolina. It's a competitive field to attract retirees and their stable spending habits. Lisa Gibbs is a senior writer for Money Magazine.
The whole idea of retirees moving in retirement, you know, really started back in the 40s when Social Security started. I mean, for the first time, you know, people who were retired, you know, could count on a certain income and they were better off. And so that's what really started this notion of retiree migration. I mean, think about Miami in the 40s and 50s. I mean, we were the Magic City.
Yep.
Our weather and all of those beautiful television, you know, scenes of palm trees. I mean, that in itself, you know, was a huge, huge attraction. And especially, you know, the New York to Florida route quickly became very crowded.
Very few people coming from the upper Midwest down to Southeast Florida.
That's right. And interestingly enough, a couple years ago, there was a report by a New York Policy Center that talked about the fact that, and this was in 2009, that for the first time, North Carolina topped Florida as the number one destination for retirees out of New York. However, think about what was happening here in 2009. You know, the housing market was in free fall. A lot of retirees stopped moving to Florida because they, like everybody else, was nervous about, you know, they were nervous about buying a house here in what if prices fell. Mm-hmm.
That volatility of home prices we've seen now on the upside over the past 18 months or so, is that a competitive disadvantage now of trying to attract a relatively well-off retirement population, but yet still with a fixed income?
Definitely. I mean, cost of living, of course, is always a big factor for retirees. But since the Great Recession, you know, even more so, that's the case. And in fact, housing costs are probably the number one reason here that, you know, the area is a little bit of a deterrent to retirees. I mean, still, though, warm oceans and golf courses and palm trees are pretty powerful. And that's a big reason why Fort Lauderdale made Money's list of best places to retire in October.
Yeah, talk to us about that. Money Magazine, your employer, puts together an annual list of best places to retire. Fort Lauderdale's on that list. What put Fort Lauderdale on the list as opposed to any other, you know, South Florida community?
You know, what we're really looking for are cities that are not in and of themselves huge, massive cities with high rises, but they are near that and near culture, yet still have a relatively lower cost of living. We know that Fort Lauderdale's home prices are generally less expensive than Miami's, mm-hmm. Yet maybe, you know, there's still that access. And, you know, healthcare is a big issue.
You talk about access. What about access to health care? And what about the infrastructure that's necessary for that 65 to 85-year-old retiree to have that long life in the golden years?
The aging population or our population of retirees are a big reason why health care jobs were a bright light in this economy during the recession. I mean, even when construction and other areas were sort of falling apart, health care was one of those industries that just kept chugging along.
What does that mean in the next half generation or even next generation of Florida workers that will be necessary to serve that continued growing retirement population that's going to call South Florida home?
That is really an excellent point, because I think one of the biggest impacts that a large population of retirees has on the economy is that issue of how many workers do we have in the workforce to support the services and the demands of the retiring population. So in the U.S. right now, there's an average of 4 workers for every retiree. Mm. In Florida, that's 3 workers for every retiree. But projecting forward, that number is expected to shrink to 2 workers
for every retiree. So there is a lot of discussion at the state level and other places about the potential worker shortage that's coming as we deal with a larger population that's over 65 here in this state. The other issue is we're going to have a slower growing economy, you know, by definition, because you don't have the same number of workers who are out there earning income. Retirees typically spend less on goods. They do spend more on services than goods, but with our current sales tax structure, we tax goods. We don't tax services. You know, I think one of the biggest competitive advantages that Florida has as well is its lack of an income tax. Honestly, I don't think we have too much to worry about in terms of attracting retirees. We're still doing it. We still have the basic building blocks of what it takes to attract retirees from other states.
Money Magazine senior writer Lisa Gibbs. Of course, not all retirees are newcomers to South Florida. Plenty of South Floridians have decided to stay put in their golden years. After all, the sun and the sand is tough to turn away from. Miranda Child is one of them. After teaching at Miami-Dade College for 20 years, this is where she retired, Hallandale Beach. And since April, after all, is National Poetry Month, and we're asking WLRN listeners to write poems about a place using the phrase, "This is where," Miranda sent us this.
It's the American dream, is it not? To retire in some sunny spot. When we get here, we find it's the truth that the culture's consumed by glamour and youth. We expect it to be number one. We were told it's where seniors came to have fun. But instead, we're invisible and often are risible, overlooked and ignored for the rich and the bored. Take heed, South Florida. You need us more than you know. This is where seniors are still gonna go. Don't take us for granted, for here we are planted. With us, you'll continue to grow.
A promise and a warning in poetry there from Miranda Child. You can contribute your This Is Where poem. You can find all the details at WLRN.org. Miranda Child enjoying her golden years here in South Florida. 8,000 Americans will retire today and every day for the next 15 years, driving opportunities and challenges for our communities and commerce. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Sunshine Economy. Thanks for listening.
Golden years. Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.